Well, all this week we have been looking at the legacy of the shootings at Columbine High School. The anniversary is this coming Saturday. One of the people that will be attending that is Casey Rugsegger Johnson, because she was there 20 years ago. She was one of the students that was shot, and she has written a new book about her survival and how she has reclaimed her life. It's called Over My Shoulder, a Columbine survivor's story of resilience, hope and a life reclaimed. And we're very pleased to have her in the studio. Good morning, Casey.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
It's good to have you with us. And earlier this morning, we heard from a current student, a senior who's at Columbine High, speaking about what it's like to be a student in the legacy of Columbine High, obviously at the school, but really what's happening for students in schools all around the country and what they call the lockdown generation. And we're going to talk about the legacy of this and what it's like now for you as the mom of students heading off to school. But first of all, Casey, why did you write this book? It's been 20 years now since you were a student, since you were shot at Columbine. You're still living with the physical scars of this, and obviously the emotional trauma is a lifelong challenge. But you've written this book. Why?
I think I just wanted to spread a message of hope and to encourage others in their own stories to find purpose and healing and freedom from the things that can take hold of our heart, like anger or fear or resentment. And really, I wanted this book to be done 2 years ago. We started it 4.5 years ago, and it's just taken this long to write. But maybe 15 years ago, I wouldn't have had much to say, much perspective about how the events of my life have impacted who I am as a mom or a wife. And now, 20 years later, with the amount of healing I've been through, I feel like I've gained so much more perspective.
And so what has happened in the past 5 years? Because you said 15 years ago you couldn't have written this book, but now we're 20 years. Or excuse me, what has happened in that interim space to give you that perspective to, you know, what's been your healing process?
I was asked in 2012 to speak at a large conference with my surgeon. And I'm a private person by nature, but was willing to speak for him because he's done so much for me. And what I found in opening up my story was that others found hope in the vulnerability and being allowed to be welcomed into the journey. And it wasn't any longer about me just talking about the hard things that had happened to me in my life, but really the healing that's come from it and the experiences I've had because of it, and that there are good things that can come even from really bad circumstances.
Well, we're not going to dwell on what exactly happened 20 years ago. That has been well documented. And really, your story is a story of survival and resilience and healing from all of this. But you were badly injured. And the physical, you mentioned there, you were at an event speaking with your surgeon because there were massive physical trauma that you experienced as well. I mean, what are you still dealing with on a physical level?
Yes. So when the shooting happened, my right shoulder bones and bones in my right hand were completely shattered. And I was at risk of losing my arm. So the surgeons were able to use an allograft, which is a donated cadaver bone, to save my arm and put it back together. It doesn't function very well, but it's still there. And people have often asked me if that gift of donation saved my life. Medically, it did not. But when I started to think about what is life, I pictured my husband and my kids, and I have two arms to wrap around them and to hug them with and to hold the hands of two kids when we cross the street. And that's life for me. So really, I do say that the gift saved my life. I have faced 12 or 13 major surgeries and still have ongoing pain, but that's not a complaint. That's just what it is. I'm really thankful to be here and to have these two arms to live a whole life with.
Well, Casey, in addition to your book, you have a blog as well that we'll put a link to at kgnu.org, Casey Rugsegger Johnson, and that's R-U-E-G SEGGERJohnson.com. And you write a lot about, well, the messaging that you have in your book about resiliency and recovering from trauma and really being a survivor. And you do have a blog post about how one of your children's friends recently noticed the scars on your shoulder. And that brought you to a position. It's like, how do I talk about my experience? How have you been able to share your experience, what you lived through, with your children, with their friends, when they ask you about the physical scars?
That's been a really tricky thing to handle. I've never wanted to put my experiences on my kids in a way that would make them fearful of school or afraid of people. So we've really packaged it age appropriately as they've asked and only given them as much as they're asking. I will never lie to my children, but I also don't think they need to know all the details at such a young age. I really want to protect their childhood and their belief that the world is good, because there is a lot of good in the world. When people do ask me, other kids ask me, I don't really find it my place to reveal such difficult things to other people's young kids. I feel like that's something that's a privilege as a parent to explain and package correctly for their own child. So oftentimes I say it's an old injury that happened, and I reassure them that I'm doing okay. And it just kind of depends how far they push. The particular girl in the blog you're talking about really pushed hard, wanting a specific answer, and her mom was standing there with her. And I really said, that's something that your mom can talk to you about when she thinks you're ready.
This issue of how we talk to our children about this, this is a reality now for parents really around the country, because as I said earlier, when we were speaking earlier this morning with the senior from who's at Columbine High School, you know, she talked about being part of the lockdown generation, that the reality for students, even the youngest students, even preschoolers and kindergartners, are subject to these drills, active shooter drills, lockdown drills. And even yesterday, parents around the Front Range of Colorado, because of all the schools that were closed, and we'll talk about, you know, the impact on yourself when something like this happens, but we had to explain to our children why the schools were closed. And there are a lot of people saying, how do we talk to our children now without instilling fear into them, but talking about the reality that they're living through? I mean, from your perspective, you have to do that from a very personal level because of your own personal story, but you also have to do it as a mom of children who go to school in 2019, and this is the reality.
Right. It's very tricky. I don't want to have to tell my kids that any of these things happen. I don't ever want to have to be preparing their hearts for the idea that something bad could happen at school, that somebody could be out to hurt them. I'm very protective of that with my kids. And I do talk about how drills are meant to keep them safe. And it's not always about a bad guy. It can be any number of threats to the school. Just like where we live in North Carolina, we have hurricane drills and tornado drills. And so we kind of talk about how the lockdown drills are done for the same reasons, just as a way of being able to keep them safe. But for my kids, I like to give them the idea that a hand was with me when I was in the library, and I never was left alone. And I believe that same hand is available for my children wherever they go, and they know that they won't ever be left alone.
We're speaking this morning on KGNU with Casey Rugsegger Johnson. 20 years ago, she was a student at Columbine High. She was in the library. She was shot. She was badly injured. And as we're hearing, as she shares her story, she's still dealing with the physical injuries and also dealing with the emotional legacy of this. And she's written about her own path to recovery in her new book. It's called Over My Shoulder, A Columbine Survivor's Story of Resilience, Hope and a Life Reclaimed. Well, Casey, you know, to the point that we're talking about how do we share this messaging? How do we talk about this with our children, given that this is a generation that is growing up with active shooter drills and lockdowns, and the events that happened yesterday here in Colorado meant that all parents here, we had to have some kind of conversation, even with the youngest children. You've written about and has been reported about the emotional impact of for you when you had to send your children to school and the fear that you felt. Talk us through that and what that was like for you.
I always thought the hardest part would be sending my kids to school, and that has proved to be true. When our girls were younger, I had just made the decision I would homeschool, because then I would never have to face the idea of sending them to a school building. They would always be under my watch. But as I started to think about it, I realized that that decision was made out of fear. And it wasn't a healthy decision. It's not what I thought at the time would be best for my kids. And I just started to realize making that choice put my fear on their upbringing. And that wasn't fair. I wanted them to be able to have the carefree childhood that I was able to have up until Columbine happened. So I started to think about that hand that was with me and the idea that I can't control a lot of what happens to my kids once they leave my watch. I mean, whether it's a car accident or an accident on the playground or something that happens at the school. But what I can control is the time I have with them before they go to school. And so what's helped me to send them to school is that I'm very intentional with our mornings. I wake up early. Before they even come down, I have their breakfast on the table. Their lunch is already in their backpack, because for that hour that I have them, I want them to have all of me. And we have in our house something we call love buckets. And I like to believe that if my kids' love buckets are full, when they leave the house, that same love is going to spill over onto others. And that feels important to me as I send them off to school each day.
I know that you've spoken about, you know, some of your coping mechanisms were to be in constant contact with the teacher, have them text you saying my kids are safe. You know, what stage are you now in that process? I mean, what is your day like when you send your kids to school? Can you get on with your day without anxiety until the point that you pick them up again?
I mean, I think about it every single day I drop them off. There's one corner that we turn on the drive to school, and we pray every morning. We pray over the school and the kids and the people who are there at the school. And I'm able to drop them off with a calmness and a peace about it now. But that doesn't mean I'm not incredibly thankful each day that I pick them up and they climb back into my car for the drive home. I definitely am. But I'm no longer needing those texts from teachers, unless occasionally I have a bad day with an anxiety. I will send an email and say, how are the kids doing? Is everything fine? To which they're happy to reply. But generally, it's gotten easier, and it just never goes away that I'm thankful to have them back each afternoon.
We're speaking today with Casey Rueckseger-Johnson, who has written a new book, Over My Shoulder, A Columbine Survivor Story of Resilience, Hope and a Life Reclaimed. Casey is in Denver this week for the 20th anniversary of the Columbine shooting. She's going to be attending the commemoration event happening on Saturday afternoon at Clement Park. Casey, this was always going to be a difficult week, I would imagine, for you. And we've spoken to other folks who've been impacted by this. And of course, this was going to be a difficult week because of the weight of the anniversary. And then, of course, with events that happened yesterday, when something like that happens in the news or there's another, you know, event at another school, are you re-traumatized? I mean, take us through what happens to you, because, you know, I'm trying to get through to this issue of the lifelong emotional impact of living through the kind of trauma that you did.
Yeah. In the first 5 to 10 years after Columbine, anytime there was another incident, it would draw me right back to a place of trauma. And the PTSD would be really strong with a lot of flashbacks and anxiety and fear, and sometimes to the point of paralyzing me from even being able to leave the house at all. But there came a time when I realized that staying stuck in that fear really gave control to the shooters and their intentions on my life. And I hated that I was still giving them that kind of control over my life because of what they had done. So I made the choice to take my life back. And that's not to say that I don't still struggle with anxiety when these things happen, because I do, because I know what's possible. But I try to think about it in a way of not giving control to the fear, not letting the fear take hold of me and control my life or the choices I make.
A lot of that anxiety, I think, you know, comes from how these stories are reported. And there's a lot of self-examination happening now amongst media professionals and certainly how Columbine was reported 20 years ago. And how do we report on other school shootings? And you've been very adamant about having the focus on those whose lives have been taken too soon. And you've written about your appreciation of Prime Minister, New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern, of not naming the name of the shooter and focusing instead on the lives that were taken. Take us through that and why that's an important narrative that we need to put forward.
Yeah, that's really important to me. You will not find the names of the Columbine shooters written in my book, and you will rarely hear me say the name of either of them. They made a video before Columbine shooting talking about how they were going to be famous and they were going to haunt our lives forever. And I feel like the focus on their names and the choices they made gives them exactly that. And it gives other people who have these sick intentions the idea that the attention they're craving, they're going to get. Yet there are so many lives who never chose to be a part of any of this, who are joining this club that nobody signs up for, that are never mentioned. When I visited the Virginia Tech Memorial just a few days after that event happened, I was heartbroken as I walk up, realizing I knew the name of the shooter and not a single name of the 30 people who were being remembered. And that was really sad to me. And I didn't like that because I had followed the news and that's all I learned about from the news. I really feel like the stories we should focus on are the ones who were forever impacted on the other side.
Of course, social media was it's changed how all of this happens, and that wasn't an issue 20 years ago when you survived the Columbine shootings. I mean, do you think that has changed how society deals with these shootings?
I don't know how much I think social media plays a part. I think for me, it's more a matter of the heart of people and the value for life. And the fact that these things keep happening and seem to happen more frequently is terrible. And I don't know the reasoning for it, and I don't know the answer for how to stop it. But for me, it goes back to valuing human life and that each of us is fully responsible for each of our decisions we make in life and how we treat other people.
You said, Casey, that you're part of a club that nobody wants to be a part of. You've survived one of these mass shootings, and you mentioned there visiting the memorial at Virginia Tech. And of course, there are any of these other shootings that people can name, unfortunately. In terms of other members of that club, though, is there a connection, certainly with the survivors of the Columbine shooting? And I know that you will be gathering on Saturday at 2 o'clock at Clement Park. But is there a sense of solidarity, or has that been part of the healing to stay connected to other folks who survived that shooting?
I definitely think it's part of the healing. It brings a lot of purpose to what I've been through when I'm able to use it to help other people. And I do think there's this unspoken understanding amongst survivors. Whenever I've met people through other shooting incidents, it's like that one person finally understands what I've seen, what I've heard, what I have smelled, what I've experienced. And shortly after Columbine, there weren't other people to tell us, hey, in 5 years, it might look like this or feel like this. And this might be a struggle of yours with flashbacks. And here's how it helped me to get past that. So I almost feel a responsibility to provide my perspective to other people who have gone through it as a way to encourage them and to show them, hey, look, it's going to be really hard. It's a hard journey and it's scary, but there's a lot of freedom in letting go of that fear that takes hold of us after surviving these things. And there's a lot of good to come and it's all worth it.
Now, I know you said that you've written your book, Over My Shoulder, A Columbine Survivor Story of Resilience, Hope and a Life Reclaimed, to help to inspire other people how you can overcome trauma, and not just a mass shooting, but I know you've spoken at events all around the world and certainly around the country here, and have met other people who've survived trauma. What is the message for even anyone who's listening, not necessarily a survivor of a mass shooting, of an incident that you survived, the Columbine shooting, but there are so many other traumas that people are dealing with? You know, what is the message of your book?
I think every story matters, and every person has a story. It just so happens that mine is a little more public because it was part of a national event. But everybody has a story and a journey to walk through. And I guess that's the reason I wanted to share my story, is recognizing other people have stories and recognizing that sometimes we need someone to encourage us that it's okay to own our story and to find the good things in it instead of focusing so much on the hard things. And that it's sometimes overcoming the fear or overcoming the big hurdle after a trauma is scarier than the freedom that comes when you overcome that fear. We almost don't want to let go because we don't know what it's like to have the freedom from it. And that took me, I don't know, 13 to 15 years to figure out. And so I really just want to encourage other people to find the purpose in their trauma. And sometimes the choices are daily choices to find something positive from it and build on that.
And in terms of other people's role in that, was it a struggle for you because it was such a public event and your face and your story were so highly publicized at that time? You know, what happened to you at Columbine, being shot in the library, having to play dead, you know, the surgeries that you had to endure. Do you find other people want to put that narrative on you and that is your own story? I mean, how do you break free of other people's expectations, you know, to live beyond that?
I've always been a really private person, and being thrown into the spotlight that way when it happened made me so uncomfortable. And I would be asked to do interviews or speeches. And when I stood in front of people, all I had at the time to tell them was the list of bad things that's happened to me. And the response was pity. And of course, that comes out of the goodness of people's hearts who really care about what I had been through. But I didn't like that feeling. I didn't like the feeling of being a victim. And so I stepped out of the spotlight for a really long time, wanting to process what this all was going to mean for me and what I wanted to let it mean for me. And it wasn't until I was able to do some internal healing and choosing how I was going to use this in my life going forward that I was able to open up and share my experience more with others.
Well, Casey, you no longer live in Colorado, but you are back. Obviously, it's the 20th anniversary. I know you're going to be participating in these memorial events happening on the actual anniversary of the Columbine shooting. That's at Clement Park on this Saturday afternoon. This must be incredibly difficult for you when these big anniversaries happen. I mean, how do you get through something like this when you go there and you're going to meet other survivors and other members of this club that we talked about that nobody wants to be part of? What will be your coping mechanism, say, to get through Saturday's events?
I think every April 20th is hard, whether it's the 5, 10 or 20 year anniversary. It's always the day in our family that's set aside to celebrate the life that I am privileged to be living still and the family I'm blessed to have, but also remember that some of my classmates weren't given that same opportunity, and to remember that it is a really difficult day for a lot of other people, whether it's 20 years or probably when it's 40 years, it's still going to be really difficult. And there's a level of respect for the journey that everybody involved has been on and how each person in that journey has lived it differently and experienced it differently. And so we usually, as a family, just set it aside as a day of togetherness and a day to celebrate life and remember the people who were lost.
And in terms of the focus of society, because really the eyes of the world are really on Columbine this year because of the 20th anniversary. And we talked about how you would like to see us talk about these events when they happen and focus on the people whose lives have been lost. But what do you want people to remember and to really bear in mind now as we are paying attention to the 20th anniversary of Columbine?
I think something that's so neat that came out of Columbine is the worldwide response that people offered from the event. And I think even for our family, I mean, we received thousands of cards and gifts from around the world. And it really showed the goodness of people to us. And I think that's so much more powerful than what those two boys chose to do on that day. And there's so much that we can draw from that and spread and continue to encourage others through traumas that are well known or traumas that aren't. But sharing our stories to bring purpose to our own stories, but also offer hope to others who are in hard times, feels like the most important thing.
Well, Casey Rugsegger Johnson is the author of a new book, Over My Shoulder, A Columbine Survivor's Story of Resilience, Hope, and a Life Reclaimed. And she herself is a survivor of Columbine. She was one of the students who was shot in the school on April 20th, 20 years ago. And she is in town for those commemoration activities. They're happening this Saturday afternoon at Clement Park. And Casey will be speaking on Saturday, May 11th, about her book. And that's going to be happening at the Barnes & Noble store in Boulder. That's on May 11th at 2 p.m. Casey, thank you very much for taking time to talk to us this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.